So you are undergraduate classmates, and you were also in the same group for master's study. And after that, traveled to the University of Minnesota for his PhD, working with Fiona O'Neill. And after that, he moved to America as a postdoc. So he works on several subjects, including like topological superconductors and antibody localizations, dynamics in microwave systems, and also subjects. So today he will talk about supersymmetric safety.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I should thanks Yingchen for the nice introduction and also inviting me here. And it's my great pleasure. So today I will basically talking about our recent work with my mentor, Joseph Machenko. And essentially we are interested in an equal one superconformal minimum models. In particular, we are interested in the Raman sectors and trying to revisit this old problem and bring some new aspects, in particular, the algebraic structures of this n equal one superconformal minimum models. Okay, so first let me just, because my talk would be a little bit formal, but essentially I'm hoping that the take home message could be simply to remember. Basically, from the early days of like 2D CFTs, people know that once you combine bosonic and fermionic degree of freedom in CFT, then there would be a natural generalization of these 2D CFTs to respect fermionic supersymmetry, which means that this symmetry interchange bosons and fermions. And one motivation of superconformal CFT comes from the string theory. And people know that basically for pure bosonic strings, these strings is unstable. In contrast, their supersymmetric extensions can be stable. And in particular, n equal two superconformal field theory, in particular, the Gapner models play a very important role in superstring theory. And n here denotes the superpartner of your theory. And in this talk, I will narrow down to the simplest of this framework, which is n equal one. And as a kinesmatic person, basically we are more interested in sort of like how to realizing SUSY in experiments. And actually, there are lots of like step MAC and kinesmatic models where this supersymmetry can emerge at a quantum critical point. So the famous one is the tricotylacine universality class in anionic chains, like Majorana arrays, as well as like various n equal one or n equal two SUSYs as the emergent symmetry at the surface state of the topological material, like 2D or 3D. In particular for n equal one, if you check in the literature, people typically thinking that n equal one SUSY superconformal is largely similar to the unitary Virasoro minimum models. We were checking this point. This basically is one of our motivation. So I will give a sort of like a little bit detailed introduction of n equal one superconformal algebra. The simplest case is once you combine a free boson with a free fermion, they are non-interacting, just putting them together, and the theory is non-interacting, so it is exactly solvable, and the energy momentum tensor is just the sum of these bosonic piece as well as this fermionic piece. So J is just a bosonic current, has conformal dimension one, and phi is just a Majorana operators. And you can check in that because these are free systems, so just by quantum mechanics, you can check in these two Lorentz generators just computing. It is bosonic because central charge is sort of like counting the degree of freedom of your system. So essentially, you're just adding one boson, which has central charge one, with one real fermion, which has central charge one half, so you get three halves. The new things for combining bosons and fermions is now you have the degree of freedom to forming the fermionic supercurrent generator, which means that you simply combine the bosonic current with the Majorana field. Then you're forming a fermionic supercurrent generator, which essentially changing bosons to fermions and fermions to bosons. Because for this simplest case, everything is just quantum mechanics. So you can work through their algebras, in particular their commutators. And essentially, for example, the first one just showing that GR is a primary field with conformal dimension 3/2. And the second line showing actually it is fermionic. In particular, you can regard it can be regarded as the fermionic generalization of the Virasoro algebra. Remember for the system, the total central charge is 3/2. And it, we have already worked through all these commutators. A very natural step is just because this is an interacting system. And a natural step is to defining the characteristic algebras for n equal 1 super Virasoro algebra. There are three pieces. So the first line is the normal one, which is just showing the bosonic Virasoro algebra. And the second one, as I mentioned, just showing the supercurrent generator has a conformal dimension 3/2. And you can regarding the third line as a superpartner of the Virasoro algebra. In particular, if you're putting C equal 3/2, you simply recover the free case. Yeah.
So you define this fermionic supercurrent generator. Is it obvious that it's a conserved current? I mean,
yeah.
So
it's like a part of the it is the superpartner of your energy momentum tensor.
Sure, I understand that it's a definition if you want or label, but that's supposed to be conserved current. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so there is an action. Do we need to think of a
the action? Yeah, you have. Something similar to.
So we integrate this, the integral of this over space gives us the action. That's just a stress tensor, right?
But essentially, the action is for the free case, you just have the boson action free and the Majorana action, which is also free, and you're putting them together because they are non interacting. And as you can see, because we know the C theorem, once you generalize to n equal 1, it will become interacting, such that the central charge must be less than 3/2. But these algebras can be basically motivated from the free case.
My question was very simple. You introduced this supercurrent, mm-hmm. and I'm asking, is it obvious that it's a conserved current?
You will see, actually, you will see, yeah, it is. You will see, actually, you can form in this fermionic part of the energy momentum tensor. And it will change it will change bosons to fermions, fermions to bosons.
That's fine. I'm asking, is it obvious that it's a current, it's a conserved current? How can I see?
Oh, you mean the terminology?
You call it the current or supercurrent, that's fine. But how do you
it played a similar role like the energy momentum tensor. Because it is the Laurent mode, as you can see. So if naturally this L just denotes the any momentum tensor is bosonic part, right? We all familiar with. And then G is just the corresponding Laurent mode for this T. It's sort of like let me put it this way. There is a superspace formalism. Which combine,
So my question I'll ask you later.
Yeah, you are right. It is conserved part, but it is fermionic. Yeah. And for short distance physics, we can express this commutators in terms of like operator product expansions. It is, all these are well known.
We are particularly interested in some unitary representations of these algebras, in the sense that they define these what's so-called superconformal minimal models. We know that once you have these algebras, then unitary comprise a very strong constraint, in particular for this small central charge. So among the first sort of like achievement for 2D CFTs is the classifications of Virasoro minimum models, which is basically built from these unitary representations. Then it is quite a natural step to incorporating supersymmetry. Then, as I mentioned, we have already worked out the algebras for the free case, which is C equal 3 halves. Then the corresponding unitary representations for this class of minimum models with central charge less than 3 halves just comprise a discrete list.
In parallel to the Virasoro case. And the central charge is, so this classification is mainly characterized by the corresponding central charge as well as the highest weight. And yeah, the central charge is zero, which means the system is trivial, but it is valid, which means you have just have a ground state, but all the descendant state are just a null state. But it's still valid, such that
the ground state is still critical.
The ground state is critical, but because your central charge is zero,
yeah, so
it's hard to tell, but essentially it is valid, which means that you can work through everything somehow is consistent.
Trivial, right?
It's trivial, but it is physical. It's you will see, but it's essentially it plays a role in this talk because it is the simplest case. Everything can be worked out straightforwardly, but once you move into like for example 4 or 6, as you can imagine, these highest weights, the number of these highest weights increasing quite rapidly. And the analysis is intractable.
So in minimal model, the smallest essential charge is
I think it is, there's, yeah, there also exists one thing is zero.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't talk about that, but it is trivial.
Yeah.
I fully agree, but it is valid.
Okay.
Yeah, it is valid.
Can I think of like the m equal to 2 case as we have a very large boson mass and a very large boson fermion mass, but they are known as red things. So they are trivial in the sense that the ground state is a product state and the central charge is zero.
But if your system has mass, then it cannot be defined by a conformal field theory. Right?
I mean, that's equal to 2. Yeah, it means trivial is point.
Another way to phrase this question is, do you have a microscopic realization in terms of a lattice model of the M equal to 2 case?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's yeah. Actually so suspicious that I think.
Yeah. But the point I want to make is all the algebra properties has to be consistent, even in this M equal to 2 case.
That's right.
Yeah.
And also in the unitary minimal models, as Inchang was asking, probably we also have the central charge equal to zero case.
Yeah.
But we don't usually consider it because it's in some sense trivial, even though.
My understanding is you just have ground state. All other state in your Hilbert space is null state. That's it. For the mass, I'm not sure. Because you have the fermionic degree of freedom and we know it has non-trivial boundary conditions. And naturally, you will have the Nephew-Schwarz sectors and the Ramon sectors. They need to satisfy these two conditions. And for these super conformal minimum models, actually, we have several concrete examples. In particular, M equal 3, as we know, it is a Virasoro minimum model. And simultaneously, it is also the super conformal minimum model. And for M equal 4, basically, it is corresponding to some Ashkin-Taylor models. And the M equals 6 would be some corresponding to some critical point of like Z6 IC models. But once your M go into like 4 and 6, as far as I know, basically there's no concrete simulations targeting these higher cases. But there are a series of study focusing on the triproductizing. Okay, so the key message for study the representation theory is the Katz determinant, which roughly speaking is the grand matrix of a vector space. And for super conformal min models, it has been worked out in the middle of 1980s. And we are particularly interested in the Roman sector. Here, the plus and minus corresponding to fermion parity even and fermion parity odd. As you can see, for a particular highest weight, according to, so PR here denotes the generating function for this Roman sector. So as so you have R and S as subscripts, then as you can observe, once the argument of this generating function equals zero, then this determinant will be vanished, which means that this would be one indication there is a null state. And as you know, that the exact solvable of 2D CFTs relying on the analysis and the construction of this null state. And because they imposing a constraint on these correlation functions. And due to these constraints, in principle, you can solve in correlation functions, any correlation functions. In that sense, the theory is solvable. And for a physical system, we want to construct the unitary Hilbert space, which means that there should be no negative norm state, and you have to systematically removing all the zero norm state. And the basic method to analysis this null state is based on the CAS determinant I mentioned. In particular, it is a basic knowledge in 2D CFTs that this null state can be arranged into Verma submodule built from descendant singular vectors. So singular vectors is defined by these two conditions. And the descendant, which means that these singular vectors has higher energies. And quantum mechanically, we know that these highest weight conditions for descendant state automatically guarantee these descendant singular vectors will be null state. But the reverse statement is not true, in the sense that based on the CAS determinant, you can identify the descendant singular vectors, and based on these singular vectors, you can build in the Verma submodule, which comprised of null state, and this Verma submodule is embedded in your original parent module. And so essentially, we want to calculate in the characters for these superconformal minimum models. And based on CAS determinant, as I mentioned, for example, starting from one highest weight, you can using CAS determinant to identify all these descendant highest weight. And corresponding to each of these descendant highest weight, you can build the Verma submodule. The interesting part of this analysis is that this Verma submodule has an interference, which means that they are not just simply embedding one of the other, but have some interference patterns. And from the expressions of this highest weight, you can also obtain some symmetries encoded in this highest weight. And essentially, this relation will give rise to these two inclusion diagrams. And as I mentioned, you have to subtracting this Verma submodule, right? But due to the interference, you have to subtracting, adding, and to infinity. And yeah, this is quite similar to the Virasoro case. Everything looked very similar. As I mentioned, once people figure out how to calculating Virasoro minimum models, it is almost immediately, I mean, the characters for the n equal one superconformal minimum models just follow naturally. And in history, it is first calculated by GKO in their famous coset constructions of superconformal field theory. And Kritisis, who is a famous string theorist, and using such kind of embedding diagram techniques, reproducing this GKO's result. So it is fairly well known. And this is their result. Okay, all this is a background. So next, let's introduce our motivations. So basically, we're just asking the question, are many aspects of like n equal one superconformal field theory similar to the Virasoro, I mean, to the bosonic conformal field theory? And from our analysis, it seems that the answer is almost yes. And in these four tables, I just list the representatives of unitary minimum models, Ising, tricoder Ising, and the super minimum models. This, in the literature, these are called CATS table. And can anyone tell me, is there any features? What is the difference between these four diagrams? Just geometrically. Any thinking about my titles?
Thinking about what?
My titles, the title of my talk. Oh, you didn't remember it. Okay.
It says super conformal. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Which one would be a little bit special? Just geometrically.
Give us a hint.
Forget about these numbers. Just the configurations.
So what's the difference between
these four tables?
Tricriticalizing and tricriticalizing.
They're the same. Yeah.
They look different. Why?
I think on the left side.
These two are essentially equivalent. It's just this is the Virasoro representation, this is the super Virasoro.
That refers to primaries?
To what?
These tables.
Yeah. These tables just give you the highest weight. But highest weight, yeah. And forget about these numbers. Just take a first glance. What is the difference? Okay, it's almost trivial.
The size of something by something. It's G by plus one and the red is G by.
A little bit non-trivial than that. Yeah. Okay, the answer is this one had a center. Am I correct?
This one had a center.
Yeah, this one had a center with single out. All others has super partners, or not super, has counterparts.
Yeah.
Right? It's forget about any. It just because all these things are discrete, such that you can only have two types. One is there's no center. There's no central box, right? No central box. But you have it.
If we were with the unitary minimal models, mm-hmm. would we have a final central box?
Only for M is even.
In the unitary minimal models?
In the unitary minimal models, there's no.
Okay.
Everything is just this type. Because this is even, this is odd. Everything is just looks similar. There's no center. The center is only occurs when M is even.
For super
minimal models. So this is a somehow a geometrical feature. But as you can see, it persuades anywhere of the theory. And if you familiar with like the Jacquive-Rabi zero mode in Dirac equation, as well as like the Majorana zero mode in topological superconductor, these zero modes, which means that to occupy some center, need some special treatment. And this would be the main topic of my presentation.
Yes, sorry. I noticed that like the center has given mention flowers. 24.
Yeah, C over 24. Yeah, it is always C over 24. It's the ground state of the Raman sector. But essentially, as you will see, it has this feature. So I hope this is the first take home message, which means that the center needs a special treatment. And this somehow simple geometrical feature surprisingly persuades anywhere of the theory, in the as I will show.
Was that because for this value, the commutators or the anti-commutators of the algebra.
You will see why this is sort of like a little bit special. So the first observation is starting from the embedding diagrams. If you focusing on this central, you immediately find actually you don't have two branches, you just have one branch. So if you're putting these two corresponding to the central, then actually this branch and this branch are identical, which means that immediately reduce the sort of like a one branch embedding diagram. And this embedding diagram has already been considered in the Virasoro case in the very early days. So naively, this just means that this submodule is embedding in the previous one and a similar. And there's no interference such that a naive calculation is you just need to subtract this one because all the other now submodule has already been embedded in it. There's no overcounting. Whatever, yeah. Then if you just do the naive calculation, similar to this one, this immediately give you a solution which is wrong, even for the m equal 2, because the character become negative, which is impossible. Is that clear? Which means that somehow one naive attack of this problem give you some answer that doesn't make sense. And the problem is more serious. And if you're looking at it in detail, essentially the problem is there is no descendant singular vectors, which means that for the simplest case m equal 2, you find this is the first null state because you just calculate it as null. It's quantum mechanics. You get zero. But this null state does not satisfy the singular vector conditions. And in the literature, people call it sub-singular vectors, but essentially just say that this diagram even doesn't make sense at the beginning. And the problem is very hard in the sense that we have no tools and the CATS determinant cannot be used because there's no singular vectors. And we somehow propose a solution to this problem. And it is quite detailed, but I just want to highlight the main result. So the main result is we conjecture an infinite hierarchy webs for these superconformal generators in the sense that we propose, actually this is somehow like an educated guess. We just find one relation satisfied uniquely by this central highest weight. And here, let me just explain it. So basically, this is any state with eigenenergy. This one plus, of course, plus C over 24. So this can be any state at this level. And capital LK actually is the most general parity preserving lowering operators, which means that once this operator acting on any state, it is just increasing your eigenenergy by this amount. So as you can see, it has this would be the most general expressions for this lowering operators. And as you can see, the power just give you the amount of the increasing energy. And actually, you can find we have a physically motivated description for this conjecture, which you can find actually in this paper. And but let me just give you, because we sort of like make a computerized algebra structures, and let me just give you one concrete example. Okay, so this, all these numbers, very complicated. This just denotes these prefactors. Even for the simplest case, m equal 4, this case, actually you can find it's quite complicated, and there are several features. The first feature is that all these are rational numbers. And the second, even though they are quite complicated, as you can see, these digitals, but the good thing is they're exact. So you cannot change any digitals. And just for fun, we can just plot them. But obviously, there seems no trend. We actually, because this is almost a conjecture, such that we didn't. There's no, as far as I know, there's no mathematical proof for it. But somehow, from our brute force computation, it seems that it might be correct. Okay, so once you implement, I forget to mention actually, in this paper, we provide a physical interpretation for this structure, which essentially told you there's no Verma submodule, as I mentioned. All these null states become linear dependent. And this relation just told you that these linear dependent relations will become linear dependent, and you know, layer by layers. It's essentially the embedding structures of linear dependent relations. And once you implement this new content, you can obtain the characters for the Ramon highest weight, which is a sort of like half of the known result. But this one half somehow is non-trivial. As I mentioned, this is at best just an educated guess. But I'm not checking the mathematical literature, but somehow. I tried, but they are too complicated. Hopefully there could be some exact proof for it. But as I mentioned, the beautiful thing is the structure is exact. Okay, so the next question you might ask is why I need to care about this algebraic structure? It's CFTs. There are many beautiful structures, and the reason is actually it has some physical consequence, in particular. Well, when you apply to boundary SCFTs. And as you know, the central task of CFT is the calculation of the fusion rules as well as the Valinda formulas. In the remaining of my talk, I just demonstrate, as I mentioned, this central geometrical feature appear anywhere in the theory, as you will see. So the first place is let's look at the porous partition function. As you know, once you put in the CFT on a torus, then there would be a very stringent constraint from modular invariant. And actually, this expression of the torus partition function has been working out in the very early days of 2D CFTs. As you can see, actually, the first feature is that the first line just pertaining to the Nephew-Schwarz sector, and I intentionally write in this form just to indicate there is a parity projection. So, which means that this is the partition function that for the parity even sector. And the second line is for the Ramon sector. But you can observe actually there's this has a symmetry, this has a factor of two, but for the central piece, there's no, it is one. And the prime just denotes the central has been. Removed from this summation. But as you can see, for a partition function, going back to this feature, you just send over this Katz table, right? It's the Katz table is sort of like the unit cell of your highest weight. Then you have to send over all of them. But as we observed, there's no partner for the central, but there exists partner for all others' highest weight. That's why. You know, when people calculating these partition functions, they actually just by modular invariance, by some nonlinear S transformations. It's surprising that the partition function automatically know the geometrical feature of your Katz table. That's the first information. A little bit more surprising is that because this partition function is modular invariant. Which means that it is highly constrained. You cannot change the relative ratio of them. And they are mutually dependent with each other. But you surprisingly find actually the character for the central highest weight actually is different from what we calculated. we have already finding a hierarchy structure in the calculating the character by brute force. But modeling invariant require another form. Everything is just by consistency. We didn't put in any, we didn't have any bias. It's just automatically generated, and we just observe it. Okay, so to make the whole theory consistent, because we believe this is correct, and this has to be correct. So what we find to combine or make them a little bit consistent is that we propose actually this Verma module has two pieces. So in the following sense, once you're assuming, for example, one highest weight state with parity plus and has a valid norm, then for this central highest weight, you can prove its parity odd set partner will automatically be a null state. You can simply check this is determined by the commutators. Then to solving or to make the whole theory consistent, we propose there has to be a non-null ground state with parity odd. In the sense that in the following sense, so if you're doing some ED calculation, you should know that you have a block, and it would be, if you have some symmetries, it will sort of like reduce to two blocks. But the original theory somehow just removing the lower piece. Then the whole theory is not consistent. You have to adding another piece. And this piece, so in the sense that the upper block corresponding to the Hilbert space generating by this H plus, because H minus is a null state automatically. Then to make your whole theory consistent, you have to, in your basic representation theory, you have to adding the lower piece. The lower block actually has to have parity. Its ground state has to have ground parity odd, and its even partner will be null state. They are decoupled, which means they are orthogonal to each other. You're just simply adding them together, and you find it is consistent. But somehow, if you check in the original literature, people typically, from my knowledge, no people mention this point. No people mention actually. It's somehow that people in some formal development, people just mention the upper subblock, which as I mentioned, is not quite consistent. This is somehow the first piece of information. So the existence of this non-null parity odd state has to be adding into a theory. And as I mentioned, this geometrical feature automatically show up in the torus partition function constrained by the modulo invariant. Next, I will show that this geometrical feature also happens in the boundary superconformal field theories. And here, because we have open boundaries, it is not a torus such that essentially we don't have modular invariant. But in the literature, we have another constraint, which people call Wolff-Schmidt duality. Essentially, you have a cylinder, you have open boundaries, but you have somehow two different quantization schemes. The first one is open, which means that your Hamiltonian will be sensitive to the boundary, which I denote the boundary as alpha and beta. And in this context, you can mapping this torus using what people call mirror image trick, mapping this open cylinder to a torus, but with identical holomorphic and anti-holomorphic sectors, in the sense that you only have, you can mapping this open cylinder to a torus, but only keeping the holomorphic sector. And this Wolff-Schmidt duality just assert that you can also calculate in this partition function in a closed channel, where it's like you have a closed string propagating from the left boundary to the right boundary. Then you're just calculating a tree level amplitude. And would be equal up to S transformation. So as you can see, Q tilde and Q is up to S transformation. Yeah, so the purpose is based on this Wolff duality, we put in into this boundary conditions, which is super conformally invariant, and by consistency, you solve it. It's a little bit formal, but I just showing up actually, it has some non trivial consequences.
So this duality only holds for one?
For a pair of boundary conditions. Yeah. So essentially, the Hamiltonian will depending on the boundary conditions in the open channel. And in the closed channel, it's essentially you just put in boundary conditions calculating the propagator. So, and this duality just like a modular invariant, like a constraint, and then you should self-consistently determine this boundary condition. And we do it, and essentially you just implement because as I mentioned, the Wolff duality is essentially is a S transformation, but like half of it. Because we know modular invariant is just invariant in the S transformation. And for boundary CFTs, you just implement square root of that. And you will see it. So implement this S matrix. This Wolff duality will give you the what people call Kadi conditions. That is the consistent conditions you have to solve collectively to determine this boundary state. And here, this capital B's is just the expansion coefficient of your Kadi state on a basis of like what people call Ishibashi state, these J's. It's a little bit formal, but let me give you the solution. So essentially, we're solving this Kadi conditions. And as you can notice, there's a new piece. So originally, this is somehow well known in all the case, because for the all the case, it has been worked out by some string theorists. But the problem has been the problem of even case has been left for maybe 20 or 30 years. But as you can see, actually, we have a new equation, and you have to solve in these four equations collectively. And eventually, you find a new Kadi state. The expression looks somehow simple, but the key point is that due to the presence of this null state, actually the Ishibashi state that comprising this new Kadi state is anti-bounding and bounding combinations, in the sense that this Kadi state is the interference of these two blocks. Because if you don't exist, if the lower block does not exist, you cannot construct this new Ishibashi state. And this bounding is just a very simply quantum mechanically, we know it's just some kind of interference between these two blocks. And then we found that we can only find this combinations that solving these conditions self-consistently. And which means that this piece, the lower block is important, not only for the torus partition function as well as for all boundary CFTs. And the good thing is that it is simply enough, but captures some quantum interference. And it is the quantum interference of Ishibashi state, which to me is a little bit interesting. And as also mentioned, there's some factors show up in some places. And these factors somehow know actually, the center is single out, but take the square root. Because essentially, boundary CFTs is just the square root of your theory on a torus. But as you can see, everything is consistent, and this geometrical feature underlying all these new results. And then we can just inverting the Kadi conditions to find the Wallinder formula, as well as the fusion rules. And you can see there's two new fusion channels appear. And we can find in their corresponding Wallinder formula. it might be a little bit formal. Yeah, this just the basic content of my talk, and essentially the that I have. Okay, in the following slides, I just because you may say that all these boundary CFTs or Cardi state, are they detectable? And here I just give you some examples showing some DMRG result that trying to convince you that this Cardi state, these fusion rules, these Wallinder formulas can be directly checked by concrete lattice simulations. But I cannot go into the details. And I because as I mentioned, there's no simple enough lattice models that could realize the m equal 4, m equal 6, such that I just gave you the example for the tricotizings. But I think the example could be illuminating, such that you can get the philosophy underlying this numerical experiments. Essentially, we first identify, for example, for the tricotizing model, we first identify the Cardi state at the physical boundaries by calculating the eigenenergy spectrum using DMRG simulations. And essentially, these degenerate patterns is formally determined by the fusion rules. And these fusion rules, because the bulk partition function essentially is determined by this physical Cardi state and their fusion consequences. In particular, we take care about these multiplicities. And you can see it actually it is somehow matchings, and we somehow can identify actually for this particular model with some open boundaries. Actually, we can identify the corresponding Cardi state because it has some classifications for the tricotizings. And in principle, for m equal 4 and m equal 6, if there's models, then we're providing these tables, which can be checked and can be useful to identify the operator content of your underlying conformal field theory. And probably the interesting thing is that this Cardi state has a natural connection to the entanglement properties or the critical entanglement properties. In particular, we're asking the question, what is the Cardi state at an artificial conformal cut? It's not a physical cut, it's a conformal cut. And then we, instead of calculating eigenenergy spectrum, we're calculating entanglement spectrum. And we surprisingly, we find that the patterns also matching. And
the setup is like just like open boundary chain.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing is actually the Cardi state at the conformal cut resemble the bulk properties, which means that it has a largest entropy because it's inside of the bulk, and we know this critical phenomena is in essence multi-criticality, which means several configurations become degenerate, and this type is the degenerate type. As you can see, it has the maximum entropy actually.
Does it depend on your physical boundary?
Yeah, it depends because as I said, I first determine the physical, right?
Yeah.
And then I need to use the fusion rules between the physical and the and the entanglement cut. Yeah, but the same procedure. I think their theory argue there are some entanglement Hamiltonian, whatever. But yeah, that would be quite detailed. And actually, as you know, in 2D CFTs, there's C theorem for the bulk, and there's a corresponding G theorem for the boundary, which means that we can study the boundary RG flows by using some boundary pinning fields. And this is the theoretical RG flows for this tricotizings. And essentially, as you can see, this degenerate type has the maximum boundary entropy, and as calculated here. It's just that in principle, numerically, we can examine this theoretical result. Okay, that's the end of my talk. And essentially, I hope that I convince you that the self-symmetric Raman highest weight, which occupy the center of the Hertz table, needs some special treatment. And we proposing an infinite hierarchies of these super symmetric generators to expose its structural peculiarity. And this, although this might be a little bit mathematical, but we also find it has a very has some straightforward consequences, physical consequences. In particular, the necessities of symmetrizing the ground state manifold for this central. And we also mentioned the interference of these two blocks to self-consistently solving the Kadi conditions. And I briefly talking about the numerical work related to these findings. In particular, I want to mention that this Kadi state, this fusion rules, Wallinder formula, all had natural connections to the critical entanglement properties. Okay, that's all. Thank you very much.